remains our merciful God, from whom comes all kinds of wisdom and understanding. We humbly ask you to guide and assist us in our deliberations and in our work. May all our efforts be directed to the welfare and good of our community and our country. And may we act honorably in pursuit of true justice for all our people, now and for the future, and for generations still to come. Amen.
Members of Parliament, Friday, 18th of May 2019, order proceedings. Confirmation of minutes. The minutes of the last meeting of Parliament, which was held on the 16th, 22nd, and 26th of May 2019.
I find the minutes of correct.
Communication from the Chair.
Owing to the unavailable absence of a number of ministers, including the Chief Minister, who is at this moment on his way back to Gibraltar, the House will now recess until 5 o'clock this afternoon, which could give the Chief Minister in particular an opportunity to be back there. So the House will recess until 5 this afternoon.
Earlier this week, I received formal notification from the leader of the opposition that the Honourable Lawrence Ayres was rejoining the official opposition. And the Honourable Lady Philip has indicated that he would like to make a short statement on the matter.
I'm grateful, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, I read the order that this has to hereby recognize and acknowledge that the Honourable Member, Lawrence Ayres, has formally, by both of our executives, being readmitted to our political family. It therefore the pleasure that I confirm that he falls within the party's will. In the last few months, Mr. Speaker, since the election of our new leader, the party has gone from strength to strength in recruiting and reaching out to former members. You quite finished? Reaching out to former members and new contributors, and it has been exciting to be part of that renewal. We are excited about the expert and political activity amongst our younger members, who are committed, bright, and enthusiastic about our renewal, and are passionate about the vote and how we can do things better. The older members return, so I need to raise my voice to speak in order to join the noise of the corporate return and the speaker who's beginning to intervene. The Honourable Member's return is a positive step in the right direction, and his work on the speaking campaign and his education is demonstrative of the good work that has been done during his time out in the GSC. None of us, Mr. Speaker, emerged from the wounds of our mothers as perfectly moulded politicians, so let's expect, Mr. Speaker, for one person, the Federal House recently knighted to deal with one. And therefore, I'm sure we all appreciate that sometimes things happen in political life that are regrettable, or people would have done things differently on reflection. It is a sign of deep political maturity and understanding of our core values that we ultimately made political engagement on this subject easier. The decision was a hard one, but it is one which, in our view, was necessary. It is right to reflect on the positive nature of the party's leadership in achieving this outcome, as well as recognising that there is one individual amongst us who deserves the respect of all, in my view. My own defender, Mr. Stephen, is a robust and consummate politician, and a person with whom I have great professional, personal, and political respect for. The Honourable Member continues to serve his responsibilities for our community seriously, and with the determination of a pitbull, and also one that forward to his continued elder and lively contributions in this place. Mr. Seaton is unequivocal in his support for the party leader's agenda, and given the history, his support is the mark of a man, and I applaud him. Mr. Seaton, we as a party have always put to work first, and we are entirely focused on providing our community with constructive and critical opposition. And therefore, on behalf of Her Majesty's opposition, I welcome Mr. Yannis back to the fold and look forward to his contributions to the incentive. Welcome back home.
Well, Speaker, it would appear that the Golden Musical Chairs contribute, and that it is now becoming normal on the other side for people to play a game of political hokey-pokey, in, out, in, out. So, Speaker, I like to say that we are, of course, amending the motion, which is before the House, to include Mr. Yannis and other select committees, which he should have been on, which has continued as an independent member. And we shall use that motion as amended when the time comes to remove him from the Brexit Circle. I think he contacted me to tell me that he expected that to be the case, and of course, it's really, but it's bigger. Given the things that the Honourable Member has said, I must reflect on the things that they said a few months past in relation to the motion that we put. Some of the things that were said about the Honourable Member, some of the things the Honourable Member has said, because those things, Mr. Speaker, are indelibly imprinted in the collective political memory of this community. The other Mr. Yannis accused the GSD of hypocrisy, of deplorable action, of being confused, and under his current leadership of being misled. Those are the things, not that we say of them, those are the things he said of them. But he's gone back home now at the prodigal son. The things that were said of him, Mr. Speaker, was that he was as if I'm on a pack of wolves, Mr. Speaker. But the wolves have now become pitfalls, Mr. Speaker. A dangerous dog, as I understand it, under our laws, Mr. Speaker. But never mind, I suppose that whoever drafted that sentence wanted to reflect clearly, but at the same time, the fact that these are. This particular breed is illegal and put to one side. But this is not the politics of anything else, the politics of post-democratic principle, or PDP, for short. Well, the Honourable General said that Mr. Yannis returned to his political home. I suppose that they are a broad church, so broad a church, Mr. Speaker, that they include more than one denomination, it would appear. And the whole of the past few months is as if we were replaying that magnificent episode of Friends when Ross and Rachel got back together and just said that we were on a break.
May be not appear in so far as the standing orders of the House are concerned. This exchange of statement has been under communication from the chair. I am not going to allow that to become a precedent. And communication from the chair will all have something to tell Parliament, and the communication from the chair, that is it. Members do not have a right to say anything then, certainly not to challenge me, unless they are prepared to move a substantive motion. That is the only way that it can be done. And I am not going to allow in the future exchanges of this nature. Statements can be made by ministers, and are made and are made by ministers, by moving a suspension of sovereign orders. In so far as other members are concerned, in so far as members generally are concerned, the only way that they can make a statement is if it is one of a personal nature. The statement made by the Honourable Leader of the Opposition, I told him earlier today, is not a personal statement. It is a political statement. It is a political statement, and therefore, I have, as a matter of courtesy, only allowed him to make it. But it is not a precedent, and I will not entertain any such proceedings in the future. It is inappropriate, certainly on the same level, for the kind of statement that we have just had, and I will not allow it in the future. That's all. Petition.
Announcement. Papers to be laid. The other one is for the health care and justice.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to lay on the table the report and audit of accounts of the Gibraltar Electricity Authority for the financial year ending the 31st of March 2016. Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to lay on the table the annual report of the Parole Board for the years 2016 and 2017. Over to you.
Report of committees. Answers to oral questions. We commence with question number 323, the annual key on hand.
Mr. Speaker, notice question 587 of 2017. For the ready rate scheme, Commission will provide a daily schedule with a number of users to review the service since October 2017
in principle. Thank you, the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Finance.
Mr. Speaker, the information requested by the Honourable Member is set out in the schedule that I now hand over.
Question number 324, the Honourable Chairman.
Can the Minister say how many clients have been placed on foreign vehicles by month since the beginning of September 2017?
And for the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, we're answering questions today with questions 325, 326, and 327.
Question number 325, the Honourable Chairman. Can
the Minister say how many fixed penalty notes with the parking offences by month have been issued to foreign vehicles since the beginning of September 2017?
Question number 326, the Honourable Chairman.
Can the Minister say how many fixed penalty notices for parking offences by month have been issued for local vehicles since the beginning of September 2017?
Question number 327, the Honourable Chairman.
Of the total number of fixed penalty notices issued since the beginning of September 2017, how many have been rescinded as having been incorrectly issued?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, I now hand over a schedule with information requested. Speaker, I may just return one moment to question 323, and I ask him to whether the Minister has available to him, and I understand if he doesn't, whether he knows how many bikes in total are available within the ready bike scheme. Mr. Speaker, not entirely sure. I think it's around 100, and I need to get back to you if you want specific monopoly price at this point.
Question number 328,
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister provide a schedule for the times and locations that time display machines for public parking spaces have been unserviceable?
And for the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, the information requested by the Honourable Member is set out in the schedule they now hand over. On the
cost us $328 for the parking. Yes, the parking paying display. I presume the dates from which the machines are reported as out, or the data was out of service are from the time at which the machines were reported, because that's clearly the minister cannot know, or his department cannot know until they are reported. So, because this minister complaint that is correct. Mr. Speaker, that is right. You see, where at the time when user may complain that the machine is not working properly, or when the person responsible for checking and auditing the machines and so goes out and understands that realizes that the machine is not working properly in any of those two scenarios. And in general, is there a type of fault that tends to occur with these machines, or are they completely different things on every occasion? Is the coin get stuck, and is that often a fault? Or? I only ask if the ministry is aware, even if they may not be understanding. Because of the various reasons why the machines may function, I wouldn't be able to give him the exact reasons on this occasion, but it could range from paper jams to coin hop up through and to other more technical issues with communication and with the forging system, etc. Mr. Speaker, I hope the machine in Grand Parade, or the only machine in Grand Parade, is unserviceable for an excess of 4 months. Is the minister aware of why that machine took so long to repair? Mr. Speaker, before I go back to that one, I did ask there was a major malfunction. The machine was returned to the manufacturer's head office. It was then returned to the location where it still goes to work, and therefore the engineer was actually sent out. And upon this time, we established as a communication issue with the 4G antenna. And since then, it was replaced. So that was an example of a major fault whereby a machine could not be set to work locally. It was sent abroad, to fix, it came back, and the error was something to do with a local communication system and not the machine itself. Possibly a cheating question from my perspective, and I know this will be available in the public domain, but I'm going to ask the question just the same. If the machine is unserviceable, would I be correct in presuming that the parking spaces remain available but effectively cannot be paid for, so there becomes free parking spaces?
Mr. Speaker, there are two machines in every single location. So one machine goes to work, there's another machine that would work. There have been very few occasions indeed when both machines have been out, and if they have been out, they've been for a very short time indeed during that specific day, but it is really possible that both machines could be out, and obviously we're alerted to that. Some of the latest machines actually will transmit the error straight to both, so the brand new machines that have that facility. So we get to hear very quickly, learn very quickly that they're out of order of something that's happened with them. So, but in theory now, if both machines broke, for hydrogen day, clearly, cars would park on it, and they wouldn't understand. The case really is one of those things.
Mr. Speaker, unfortunately, I do think that these figures underestimate the nature of the problem, especially when you have a car park, where I attempt to park. But we have this in the room. So therefore, I speak from personal experience. If there are two machines that when we have the car park, there is one of you coming that accepts the new pound coins, and there's one at the very end that accepts the old pound coins. Doesn't accept. So in other words, the machine at the very end accepts new pound coins, but not the old pound coins, and the one at the end accepts old pound coins, but not the new pound coins. Also, the one at the end accepts credit cards, whereas the one at the beginning does not accept credit cards. These machines have been problematical because every single time that it rains, there is a problem with the machine. And there have been significant problems as well. I can tell you, I'm asking if you're aware that there are significant problems with the credit card payment facility in relation to this one machine at the very end, because of course professionals that bring their cars in, and do that among the public as well, and very rare that you go around with huge amounts of coins in your pocket from the day before, particularly if you're passing there habitually every single day. You don't have coins every single day. I mean, except in my book, that's what I think on my mind. And therefore, the rely on credit cards. This dispute has been consistently unreliable in relation to credit cards. It's been consistently unreliable, both of them, in terms of you put two pound coins, for example, in, but you can't pay the third in or a fourth. And this is the type of nightmare that is facing certainly members of the public that we've got at this particular pop-up. And if you're aware of that, and if you're not aware of it, what are you going to do in terms of finding out whether the reaction to what I'm saying to the real number of copper flow of the fact is correct, or if I'm asking you stuff it is? Still, would you sound like him to take those things regularly? Because that would give me a... One thing I will say though, the credit card machines are quite a novel situation where they're painted to a pattern, a painted space, because that is one of the recent developments that we've added, and the new machines are fully capable of credit card facilities. And for that very reason, because you don't want to carry around lots of coins in your pocket. But those are very unique place, and it's only the except the debate of pounds, except the euro coins as well. And then we have our local pounds, the UK pounds as well. So the machines do, unfortunately, sometimes struggle with coins. It's something like that complaint I have heard of. And the new machines now take that, I mean, they will accept the divorce coin as a third currency, so to speak. So you recognize the weight of a different coin, but they have caused difficulty in certain respects. The problem of the credit card issue, I'm always in sort of looking at figures and looking at how the things are performing, and complaints do come to me, so the duty of the family themselves and the company. But I would most definitely have a look at that with interest, and I put that as a report, and I will find out, see whether I can get to the bottom of what happened.
The public here as well acknowledge the sterling work of Minister Nkurunziza's former CEO, Patty Wattiwa, rather that she is a GOP member. Who organises the passing there, Reverend Hart's carpet, absolutely every morning, and directs everybody to the appropriate member to phone to make complaints every time that there is something wrong with these machines. And I can tell you, another gentleman, that it is something that happens on a daily basis. Mr. Speaker, but the comparing machines, in fact, the machine at the Snowbay Marina, a Snowbay Marina, I beg your pardon. That machine works perfectly. It is one there that works on credit cards. You've got to type in the registration plate of the registration number of the car, and it's fantastic. And that is never broken. I don't know whether it's because it's a newer machine, but if the government, if I can urge the government to effectively install that type of machine at Wenwood Park car park, which is a much more used car park than the Snowboat Marina, then I think that would be a constructive move in the right direction. Then, Mr. Speaker, some machines arrived this week. So they are exactly right. The new machines, which these machines have, they work extremely well, but unfortunately they are subjected to a lot of duty, not only with weather, use. You have seen people who put coins in and they wrap the coins in the side and they bang the machine and all sorts of things. So, the one thing you mentioned, and I'm pretty aware that these parking cars are when you do our visits, I've noticed this car park there. And they do work to get to the information arena. So, yes, those are the latest technologies, and those are the machines that we're installing throughout the world, and they will be. Hopefully in speech to the way to the period of time.
By
Speaker. In the course of the exchange, the Minister has had my colleague looking at new machines and the collection of the registration number of the cars. So, I wonder if the Minister could explain to us when we need to collect this data.
Mr. Speaker, the machines asked the question and what I said. The reason I was given is because it links the payment to specific vehicles, so you cannot pass over credit to another vehicle. So, for example, if you pay £10 and you decide you have to wrap up and you've wrapped, you need just 1 hour, you then pass it on or sell it on to the person that comes your way. So, this is the way that the machines are designed in the UK, and we have the same system in the world. So, it ties the payment to the machine to the car.
One more thing, Mr. Speaker. Just reference to the latest machines that have arrived. Is anyone still aware whether they can be, whether they function with SMS? So if you're running late, you can actually text an advance to the machine, as we see in many other cities around the world.
Not even speaker, we need to recognize this different technology completely, that they don't run off that sort of machine. Those very interesting technology comes with smart city technology, and that runs through telephone systems. And apps linked to telephone. So it's something that we are actively pursuing as the way forward. And we obviously we have exciting innovations at our fleet for the future.
Question number 329, the Emirates Beyond.
Speaker, what is the government's view on the parking of vehicles for the purposes of conducting business in public car parks or in public parking spaces?
Answer the order and make the point to check on time.
Speaker, what is the question for the question 230?
Question number 330, the order is on hand.
Can the Minister confirm that commercial vehicles are subject to exactly the same MOT requirements as private vehicles and that all are subjected to emissions testing?
And for the other group of vehicle structure and planning.
Mr. Speaker, we reference to question 229. I would be grateful if the Honourable Member could elaborate us to the manner that business strategy is referring to. I would be very happy to share this with all the information at my disposal at a later date, but where the conduct of business on the public highway does not necessarily fall under my remit as Minister for Transport and Traffic. As you may be aware, Mr. Speaker, there are a number of firms for conducting business in public parking spaces. Reference to question 230, that is no. All commercial vehicles are tested 1 year after the date when the vehicle was first registered and thereafter annually. While private motor vehicles are tested 4 years after data first registration and thereafter biannually. Data first registration is defined as date first put into service, whether in the data or elsewhere. Express emissions for all vehicles have always been part of the roadworthiness test. Furthermore, the motor vehicle test center has purchased one new emission testing machine, commonly known as a smoke meter, and there are in the process of ordering two more smart meters. These machines meet the requirements of Directive 2009/40/EC on periodic roadworthiness tests, which comes into force on the 20th of May this year.
May I elicit one more point? In answer to question 230, the Minister said, private pressure vehicles, 4 years after the date of the first registration, thereafter biannually. Every 2 years is not biannually. Biannually is every 6 months. I'm not speaking about profession, but I think I should also correct the English one as well. Biannually. Every 2 years, biannually, not biannually.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Absolutely right. I will ask my staff, I'm just reading off the data that you're absolutely right. It's every 2 years, as opposed to every 6 months.
Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. We're finished by 92 questions, 329.
I do understand that there are many purposes to which businesses may wish to conduct business on the public highway, in public car parks, in public parking spaces. This is why I referred to give the question to government in general rather than to a specific minister. On this occasion, I think the minister may be able to elaborate on elements of the type of business. For instance, in Grand Parade, I know a lot of vehicles appear to be parked for sale. If it's possible or likely that those vehicles are being sold by a particular business, what is government's view? Are those spaces paid for by the business, or does the business have a permit to use those spaces? How does that system work?
It's perfectly legal to place a private car on the public highway and, you know, advertise it for sale. How it is done specifically, I don't know whether the vehicles, you know, I can't prove they all come from the same company or one company or individual sales, or how it is going to be the business is leading to whether, you know, they are conducting the business that is said. You have to look at that. But it has been reported to me that the numbers that you call to ask about a vehicle are not necessarily the same number. So, if for example you had an advert with a company logo on it and phone the same number, and then clearly you can assume that it's a business selling second-hand vehicles on a public highway on a car park, but I don't think that is the case. And I don't really know exactly, and specific cases may be different, whether I have never, you know, sold a vehicle in that respect, whether that car is linked to individual and being sold for that person and it remains in that person's name, or whether that car has been transferred to the person who the vehicle has been passed on to an identity of the company, or so again, I think it's a very difficult question to reply to an absolute no respect.
I appreciate that any kind of individual can place a notice on their car that it's for sale. However, it would appear to me to be more than a coincidence that in Grand Parade at the moment, previously on Ragged Star, we had 18 or 20 vehicles all parked alongside each other, all for sale, where we don't see similar activity in other places of Gibraltar. So the random odd vehicle, I wouldn't like to say that it may be for business purposes. Now, I understand the minister telling me there are different numbers it's difficult to investigate, is it something that is worthy of investigation just to assess whether this is a business that's driving this practice, or whether it can't be reasonable for a business to use public land to sell its business without an appropriate permit to do so? To make money out of public land in that way would seem to be inappropriate. Is it something that should be, or if the minister considers should investigate by his department?
Mr. Speaker, clearly, it is one business conducting a business in a car park, I want to see something that needs to be looked at as to who the vehicle is registered to, which I think is key to what the question is. If the vehicle is still registered as a person who has insurance and the red book is in that person's name, is it a private vehicle, or has he sold that vehicle to the company, and the company has advertised on the responsibility to give an action to the company? So it's a difficult one to get to the bottom of that. I will say this of any use. As we progress with the regulatory pattern scheme, naturally, this practice could well cease, because you'll only be able to park a vehicle in the place where it resides, so to speak. So with that, and because as the plan is set at the moment, the earlier question that you are asking about the right way, which is free parking, and if it is free parking, anyone has the right to park there. As the schemes start developing, the use of that right parking may change in that respect. But definitely, I think if it's one company doing that, operating and conducting a business from public areas, then I think it's something which affects other users and other people wishing to park. I don't know how easy it is, to stamp out, because we need to check, who the vehicle is registered to and whether it's actually a company selling it on behalf of someone else, or whether it's a company selling it for their own property.
I think this is an important topic. In fact, the only member, when he was explaining and justifying the multitude of parking spaces at Raggett Stop, when we were complaining, well, look, there are empty spaces there, and the gates seem to be taken by Zone 2 residents. What are you doing about it? One of the things that you're not going to get instead, apart from, well, it's I can only say, let's see how it works out, is that before there used to be a number of cars there that were for sale, whether it's private, business, or whatever, they were there, and they were parked almost on a permanent basis in a public parking space, taking the space from others that would use them. Now, this is not agreed that is a practice that is potentially abusive, and that therefore, if it is potentially abusive, that any government that really wants to tackle the parking problem in Gibraltar has to tackle that kind of abusive practice. And that it would be entirely right for a government to consider whether it should legislate in order to prevent across the board. And I know that it would be difficult because you'd have to do it across the board, because it's very difficult. For the reason the Honourable Gentleman outlined in his answer to my friend, Mr. Hammond, to determine whether it's a business or whether it's a privately owned vehicle, because in fact it could be a business, but the logbook is still in the name of the privately owned, the private individual. But I think it's entirely proper, and if you disagree with it, it's entirely proper for the government to consider whether it should legislate across the board in this area. You know, they definitely take those into account. It's something which I am aware of. It's by no means the business or something that you are leading to. It's really, it's the one that works in the area. This could happen in other areas. You go to other businesses, and be because of servicing vehicles or whatever. Now, if it's abusive in nature and something which you look at, there's many, many things which happen in terms of parking. It's not just a margin. There's a myriad of things which you look at. And I think it's unusual to accept that it's also something that we need to look at as well, apart from all the other aspects. But I think it's something that I do accept that people will consider that, and I think it's clear what your side of that side of the house is where we're on this side. So but it's clear from our side that obviously I'm looking at every single thing we've done and traffic, and it's something that I'm well aware of too. In order that this discussion doesn't appear to revolve around a single business, I would just like to add, and the Minister has mentioned the fact that this activity or business activities do take place in other areas. And I would like to refer specifically to the Capital and Bay Car Park, which frequently appears to have vehicle parks that are being serviced, being repaired. And as we approach the summer, clearly those parking spaces that are taken up by a business, if the business has no right to use those parking spaces, either through tenant or other means, would be invaluable as public parking spaces because access to the police space becomes very difficult. Would the government, would the minister similarly consider looking at the issue of the Capital and Bay Car Park and ensuring that the public parking spaces there are available to the public as opposed to business?
It's a very good thing. I mean, it happens in Capital and Bay Car Park, it happens in others. Just referring to ones at the proposal that you've mentioned. And there are mechanics that work on the street, there are others that store things in vehicles, there are others that work cars in public parking spaces, rather than through cars and sales. It's something which happens, and one of the tools that we have at our disposition that we use effectively, I think, is that of street cleaning. And by street cleaning and street cleaning as often as possible, it causes major disruption to businesses if they're operating from the car park. And that is, in that respect, disincentivizes that sort of behavior. I mean, clearly, you could street clean every single week. Everything a week, for example, and that would definitely, I don't think, people would be interested in operating in that way. But it's something which I think the speaking does tackle. Obviously, we are very well aware of these practices, and obviously, we will consider ways on how we can assist in these steps.
I do understand that speaking is clearly disruptive of a business that may be conducting activity on the public highway or in public parking, but the fact is, if this
public parking, and so it should be available to the public, and therefore a more direct means of confronting a business that's conducting activity in this place might be more appropriate. Would the Minister agree with me?
Like I said, I think this is a problem that we are well, very well aware of, and there's so many things that have been tackled as part of the planet, part of traffic, and it's just another thing that needs to be looked at and tackled. But it's another one of the myriad of items that we need to find time to tackle. We at the moment we are progressing with other residential public schemes. We've taken a vast amount of time from the Department of Government and many other projects as part of the SDGs. So it's not something which is critical at the moment, but it's definitely something that we are aware of and that we will need to give time to in due course.
Question number 341, the Honourable Ian Hammond.
Speaker, what income is derived by government for the parking of light fleet vehicles at the Devil's Tower Road car park?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, annual income derived from the Devil's Tower Road car park for parking of light fleet vehicles is from design £30,276 and from Baccaroni £108,000.
Question number 332, the Honourable Ian Hammond.
Very briefly, Mr. Speaker. Would the Minister be aware of how many parking spaces those companies occupy within those car parks?
Speaker, I don't know whether they actually work a car park space or whether they take up an area and they may perhaps be fitting 3 cars in a space of 2 because they are using that area exclusively. They have ways of means of perhaps jumping through windows into other ways to move them out. But I don't think it's safe to park into, roughly, there may be, numbers of cars, numbers of cars. Approximately, I think there's at least a couple of hundred and just a section of that for the line. So I need to find that, and it's areas, I think that is more, there's sort of many ties into that area possible.
Mr. Speaker, but this is a temporary arrangement which is made to maximize usage of the car park of Devil's Tower Road, because in this course in 2011, the refund of those floors which were underutilized, and it was felt it made good sense for taxpayer to put up to good use, and I think that has in fact been the case. And now, as we look towards the near future, this will end because the companies will be relocating to other areas that they have their purchasing, and that will now release the capital stages down in that car park for us to use in a different fashion.
Question number 332, the Honourable Ian Hammond.
Could the Minister provide a schedule for the towns of the list of the Devil's Tower Road car park have been on service with?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
The schedule is written correctly by the Honourable Member. It's set out in the schedule that I now hand over.
did the minister have an explanation as to why the list appears to be unserviceable so often in these parts? We're looking at list 1 and 4, for instance, that's been unserviceable for the entirety of both March and April of this year. List 2 and 3 have been slightly better, but still very, very poor record on serviceability. Is there a reason for this?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, the reason is because we have water ingress due to the design of the building. So water has been coming through the lift shaft, and causing major disruptions to the electrical system within the lift. We have now managed to find ways of tackling this issue, and the lifts are now, major parts have been replaced now. And as far as I'm aware, the lifts are working much better. But it was due to water ingress, that was the reason why the lifts were out.
Question number 333, the Honourable Chairman.
Mr. Speaker, are any arrangements in place with the Senate Authority for the transmission of speeding fines required in Spain for local drivers?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, did you also respond to the memorandum of understanding with the Driver Vehicle and Licensing Agency in the UK, which sets out the arrangements established between the DVLA and the Maltese Government of Gibraltar, including details for the services and standards being provided to comply with Directive EU 2015-413, facilitating cross-border exchange of information on road safety-related traffic offences. The aim of this directive is to facilitate the cross-border exchange of information on road safety-related traffic offences within all EU member states, not only Spain, and thereby facilitate the enforcement of penalties.
Would the Minister be aware of how many fines have been allocated to a Gibraltar registered vehicle due to offences in Spain since this agreement came into place?
People know whether the question is asked people that. I think that question may have been asked by the specialty level, whether it was raised by is it a come up with?
And possibly on the same theme, is the Minister aware of any foreign registered vehicles who have been pursued in their own country for offences that have taken place in Gibraltar?
We can ask the question specifically and find out.
Question number 334, the Honourable Adam Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, previous to question 444 of 2017, the Mr. Grounds Code paragraph has begun to reconsider the possibility of an underground scheme, and there was an economic obstacle to the previous underground scheme because then the developer was committed to pay for the whole project.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
The previous underground scheme was formally presented to the Jewish administration and was not proceeded with at the time. After a meeting between the Chief Minister and the ESU, Goings and the Heritage Trust, this government is analysing once again the upgraded costumes and technical information with regard to an underground scheme and will then take a decision one way or another.
the British Minister of Defence. So, just to confirm to the House, what he's saying now is that given the representation of the DPC, for them to be considering going underground. And as part of that, sitting back to the other side of my question of the economic viability, you haven't answered my question.
Mr. Speaker, that's not what the Honourable Gentleman said. What he said was that after a meeting with the Chief Minister, the government is considering the position having spoken to the ESG Grant and the Heritage Trust, which is the position. I'm not trying to fence with it. It's not the favorite sport of pictures, as far as I understand. What I'm trying to do is ensure that the process that the government has embarked upon is not in any way tarnished by an attempt to take us in one direction or another before we've been able to make a final determination. And so I think it is appropriate to say that we are reviewing aspects of what we have been told, and of those things that we have been told can be put to those who originally made the designs that were looked at in a way that might make the determinations that were made different, then it may be that the final design is different and the final decision is different. I do know that the other government is planning for more parking in the town area. I really am not going to keep him waiting for much longer, but I think it's because he really should have bought at Midtown like so many others did. Regardless of the representations made by these internal groups, it's a key sense of terrible opinion that is uneconomic to go underground at the Empire. Mr. Speaker, I have not been saying anything to suggest the contrary. Mr. Speaker, would the Chief Minister not agree with me that if somebody, a third party, agrees to pay the entire scheme and not the penny leaves the pocket of the government, then it is entirely economic? Would you not agree? No, Mr. Speaker, because the Honourable Gentleman is so into factoring so many aspects of what public planning is all about, that he fails to even point in the direction of appropriate decision making in respect of an asset like Grand Parade. For example, somebody can tell you that they're going to do something at an unrealistic price, and we know that the SPV they're going to set up for that purpose, the central purpose vehicle they're going to set up for that purpose, is going to be bankrupt halfway through the project. And then you're either going to leave a big hole in the ground, or you're going to have to use taxpayers' money to continue. These days, Mr. Speaker, the presence of the contract at the tunnel under the runway, which was an underbid at the time that they were in government, which led to extensive litigation. So indeed, Mr. Speaker, these days, the project that they oversaw by OEM at Cumberland, etc., which resulted in that company going into liquidation, although they loaned it for £7 million and the taxpayer lost £7 million as a result. So the public of third party says it will pay for something, does that mean it's economic? And of course, a third party that is solvent to pay for something and set up a parking which is economically viable at a rate of £15 per hour for parking, something that even the most determined parking people might decide is not a good outcome for the taxpayer for this community. So the Honourable Gentleman postulates a hypothesis which is entirely wrong, and I'm surprised that the man who's been an accountant should not assume the obvious pitfall that the proposal would have given rise to even for the parking pitfall.
I really met with you from the comments that you've been made. First of all, he is a lawyer, or more above all, that if you contract with somebody on a major construction project, the first thing you're asked for is, of course, a performance bond. But of course, if the Chief Minister doesn't know anything like that, that is your backdrop and do a course on construction. But, Mr. Speaker, in terms of the viability of a project, and certainly the record of the US government, we can go back in time as far as we want, we can go back to Bibliotheque if we want. And that's the reason we have the report of Bibliotheque, when we do it for the foreign government, but we're not going to go back and go to nuclear risk. And Mr. Speaker, if there is a project in which a developer who puts up a performance bond to complete the project, then clearly he must agree that we need to make.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman has ever enlightened me when he speaks in this House. Given that he suggested that the absence of knowledge of the need for a performance bond that somebody embarked on a construction project vitiates my knowledge of the law, I now know where the previously referred to
greatest civilian of all time. I think he must be back at Queen Mary College, because it was under his administration and carrying the political colours that he has always defended, not some of the others, the Labour Party, the PDP and the Independents, but he has always been JV, that the government embarked on the OEM project of Cumberland without the sort of performance bonds that Fulham being able to complete. And so the collapse of a company called Haymills, and so, as I told him a moment ago, the government loaned that company £7 million and a £7 million loss to the taxpayer. Much as I would like to go back to the gleaming towers of Oxford, where I spent many happy days, and perhaps one day we'll spend some more in the future, Mr. Speaker, I dare say that those who taught in contract taught me a downside better than those who taught in account.
the world is currently owned by the Rapporteur and any other product works fall directly under the rules of the Rapporteur. There are no immediate safety concerns in the area at this moment in time, and it is understood that the Rapporteur is considering the redevelopment of the area affected by the World Cup.
Mr. Speaker, I wanted to ask a supplementary, but I feel I'm not in the sense that I appreciate that the conduct could have been that it's private and it therefore doesn't fall within the remit of government. But is there anything that government has a duty of dealing with or being on top of when something actually ends up looking rather unsightly, even when it's a private piece of land?
The government remit was in time of collapse. The most important thing was the safety of the area. That was addressed effectively, and the area is absolutely safe at the moment. And because the Rapporteur we understand the conclusion of the development of the area, because of the collapse, I don't think there's much more to at the moment. It may not be as likely as that a war was before, because it was just part of a war and a very big peace that was there. But it's quite complicated, and we have time for it. A question related to this. Does the government have any rights as a landlord in respect to this particular property? I haven't looked at it, I have to say. But of course, if the government is the freeholder, then to give the crown and right of the government of Gibraltar, there may well be clauses in the lease that could allow the government to insist that this particular wall is repaired. I don't know because I haven't looked at the lease. The lease, I'm just asking.
So, Mr. Speaker, all of us have looked at the lease because the tenant is looking at the redevelopment already and is looking to make proposals to members of the government that would involve any element of change of use, or indeed to the DPC that involves a new project. We already have an indication from the owners of what they might initially be thinking of, but they haven't yet firmed up. So the right procedure indeed to require somebody who is in the process of doing something to do it at a particular speed which might not be commercially viable. I think the important thing is to know that you don't need to have a wall there, given that there is now stepping back. The wall is a retaining wall for the material that has now come down from there, and there is therefore an opportunity to do something which is different to a retaining wall. It's not fair for me to say anything else, Mr. Speaker, at this stage, because I have been told by the owners what they're thinking of doing, but they may make a different decision, but I'm quite happy to tell them behind the speaker's chair what it is that they may be considering.
I'm not sure if I recall correctly, but I believe technical services were involved at the time of the wall collapse in terms of cleaning up and making the area safe. Had the hotel seen as a private wall, made any compensation payment to the government for this work?
I think the overdone is wrong. Technical services attended the scene and ensured that matters were dealt with in keeping with the safety requirements of the technical services department, but the works were undertaken at the cost of the leaseholder.
I think I move at the House is now adjourned. Before I do, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to recognise that the Muslim community in Gibraltar, with the Muslims across the world, have now started the period of Ramadan, and that the Jewish community in Gibraltar will be celebrating their Feast of Shavuot on Monday. And indeed, Mr. Speaker, to reflect for a moment in a manner that I'm sure will unite the whole House, that today the father of the house is not with us because he has been to Buckingham Palace to be knighted by Prince Charles, the heir to the throne, and has emerged a knight, Mr. Speaker. I give notice that I shall be moving a motion during the course of this meeting, which I do hope will enjoy the support of all members, that he also be made
a free man of the city of Gibraltar.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know whether we've seen the last of the musical chairs, but I propose that we return on Wednesday next week at 3 p.m. to see what the lay of the land might be.
Mr. Speaker, may I also extend our condolences, and I'm sure that I speak to everybody on this side of the House, to Mr. McGee and the South Council at this time.
I've expressed my condolences to Mr. McGee personally today, but given that he has wanted to express them publicly, I think it is right that on behalf of all his colleagues on this side of the House, we also express our condolences.
And that makes the House for now again to next Wednesday at 3 p.m.